There's a code of silence, and it can't go on.
Hi, folks. I'm Alan Watt, and this is Cutting Through the Matrix. It's interesting that even Roe, when they were pirates, remember, two of the Knights Templars became the first pirates, and they had the first Skull and Bones flag. That was their flag. That was also the same sheet on which you were raised from the dead. They still use them in the lodges, yet some of the lodges. But they said they were the sons of Salomon, which is a play on the salmon. The salmon is a fish with red. Red is a color for revolution. So they said they were the sons of Salomon, or Solomon, a play on Solomon, but they said Salomon. And that's why you have the men in the little boats that come off the main ship, like seed, they come off. And it's a row boat, you see. So the row is basically the spawn of Solomon. And it's interesting, even in the movie to do with the Skull and Bones movie, I think it was called Bones, the first one they put out there, even showed you that they had a place called the War Room, and War Room was written on the wall. And that's what it's all about, because their job, supposedly, to all of us profane ones, all of us in the darkness, is to enlighten us. And if we can't be enlightened, then they must rule us like sheep and train us and use us, too. They have no problem in using us. That's what the profane really are for, according to the higher Freemasons. Because, as Karl Marx said, all wars are economic in nature. And sure enough, the big pirates at the top plunder every country they go into. That was how they lived down through the centuries. And some of these pirate families are allowed a certain amount of chess moves within this board game of theirs, this board game which is a bunch of rules that apply to them only. That's what knighthood is all about. Knights were sworn, they took allegiance to serve a master at any cost, and obey any order they were given. And so the modern knights that came up through the pirate era, the Skull and Bones, going from the Knights Templars right upwards, and that was a symbol, by the way, of the Knights Templars flag. When they went to sea, it was a Skull and Bones. They became the pirates, and they looted a good part of the planet. So they were allowed to have competition between powerful families, even though these big families were often related, in fact. And they push each other out the way sometimes and take over their other countries, but they always spare their cousins. But, you know, if you want to own the wealth of the world and the minerals and everything in the world, you don't go for petty stuff, you go for the whole lot. And since you're a knight, you've all gone through the knight phases of your various Masonic lodges, then a knight, it goes on a mission, a quest.
Like a crusade almost, huh?
It's a quest.
A quest, okay.
And it's also sent by his master on the quest. That's the part of it too. And he is bold. Now another term for bold is audacious. You must be audacious. And with audacity, and that means that you break all rules that the normal people will follow. That's why you succeed. And so you go for the biggest stakes of all, break all the rules to get it. And you have succeeded on your quest.
So the pirates were ruthless, right? And so the Skull and Bones is sort of a manifestation of that, right?
The pirates were actually the member. The early pirates were the members in the fleet of the Knights Templar that left France before they were caught with their treasure. And they erected the flag, because even Masonic lodges often use that particular Skull and Bones flag instead of the coffin. They'll lay it out as their jewels on a traveling lodge. So they'll lay on the flag to be raised up from the dead by the Grand Master. And that became the flag for piracy.
Were the Russell Trust ships that went into India and China with opium, you know, shipments and so forth? I read somewhere, and I'm not sure how accurate this is, but the company flag that they flew on their ships was the Skull and Bones.
They flew the Skull and Bones, and they also had another, that quite a few other companies. They had the British East India Company flag as well, which was actually copied into being what you think is the American flag. That was the British East India Company.
Have many of these families in the past made their fortunes on drug, dealing and shipping and so forth? Is that the basis of some of their wealth?
It's a lot of their wealth down through the ages. These are intergenerational families. Often they're intermarried within each other. And we know that the Bushes' ancestors were leading members in dumping the opium on China, and so were the Kerrys, by the way. They all went to the same universities, and they all dumped opium and made.
The benefactor of Yale, he was an East India official.
He founded it. One of the main founders, yeah.
Okay,
Elihu Yale, his name was.
Yeah, so he bequeathed, I think, 600 pounds or something, the sell of some cargo, and it was used to establish the university after it had been established earlier as much more of a religious college, I believe.
Yeah. Well, Elihu Yale said...
Elijah Yale, that's right.
Yeah. And he said, we must create these universities in this one particular because forever, he says, we shall supply the country with our own people and never lose sight of the direction that we're going. In other words, they'd always supply the people that would become the leaders. Yeah.
I've read people talk about the world conspiracy as a Zionist conspiracy, as a Jewish conspiracy, as a Jesuit conspiracy, as a conspiracy of the international bankers. What is your take on it?
Well, yeah, they'd love to segregate it all from each other. It's all one part and parcel of the same thing, because when you go into the elite histories of the aristocracy, they don't care if you're Mohammedan or Jewish or Christian or whatever background. People at that level don't believe in the religions which they preside over. They're way beyond religion. They understand, they're taught very early on that religion is just to control the public into an orderly society. And they don't believe what they call fairy tales or superstitions. They have their own religion at the top, and it's pretty well a form of Hinduism almost, which believes... I mean, that's where Darwinism comes from. You'll find it didn't start with Darwin. It started with Hinduism, where we started off as amoebas in the slime and gradually worked our way up from there. Survival of the fittest is all part and parcel of their religion. And they intermarry each other. You'll find people who supposedly are Jews or Christians or whatever intermarrying with the royal families if they curry enough favor. And if they've done all the right kinds of work for the great work, as they call it, the global domination.
So are you saying that they're tracking genetically? It doesn't really matter what their affiliation is with? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, they really don't, because at that level, they don't... It's like any aristocracy. There's a Jewish aristocracy. There's an Islamic aristocracy. There's always an aristocracy that separates itself from the people. Even though they'll go to all the top holy sermons or functions, and the public see them as the best that they have, and they're all one of us. That's the idea. But they don't believe the same things either that the rest of the public believe.
One of the many things that people like Anthony C. Sutton, who wrote the first book on Skull and Bones, Secret Fraternity out of Yale that our president and his father are in, believe that this group is basically satanic. Would you agree with that?
It's satanic in the sense that they worship themselves. If you look, what is a god, or what is even a Satan? A Satan is something. If you take even the Lucifer figure is more accurate, really, because in ancient religions they were two separate entities. Satan and Lucifer eventually got mixed together, but Lucifer is Prometheus, who brings light to the world, intellect to those who can receive it. That's what it means. And these characters use this terminology about themselves. They believe they're the wisest and brightest, and therefore the most fit to rule over the lessers, those in the darkness, which they call the profane. That's what they mean by the darkness, those who don't understand. So it's a religion in that sense. Evil, there's no doubt about it. What's interesting, if you look at a psychopath and list up all of the scientific descriptions and classifications of psychopathy and the traits that they have, with no conscience, huge egos, how they'll do the audacious things, things that no one would ever expect to happen. And then you put it right next to what they used to call demonology. They're both identical, or demonic possession. In other words, they're cruel. They can plan the deaths or wars, which will kill off millions of people, profit from them, and go out and have parties after the meeting. I mean, that's not what we normally call human. So it's up to the individual if you want to accept they're psychopaths or if there's something else to it. But the traits are identical.
From myself, Alan Ward, it's good night to me, your God or your gods go with you.